Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. I'm home in Minnesota, which is a nice thing in the summer. That's why we live here, is for the, you know, 3-4 months of summer we have. So, and I got my Joe. I got my cup of Joe. So
absolutely.
I'm all set.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I need a couple of extra cups, and I'll tell you why. And I won't go into it too long. But I've been on this journey, as you know, of trying to learn this game where you take a tiny hard ball and you hit it with a long metal or graphite stick. And the person teaching me said, Mo, you have to stop having negative self-talk. He goes, why do you walk up and say, oh my gosh, there's people behind you. Oh my gosh, there's people ahead of you. Oh my gosh, the ball's never going to go in the right direction. Oh, this is a horrible. Can we leave? And that's literally what I said, word for word, the last thing. And he replayed it back to me, Mark. I said, I'm not sure I'm cut out for this game. This is very stressful. But you're an avid golfer, so I'm going to have to take some tutelage from you at some point and calm myself down. But that's what I need. I need this coffee. Actually, the coffee isn't calming me down. It's probably revving me up. But that being said, I need it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a game that's played in the 6 inches between your ears. That's for sure. So,
Why
don't you introduce our guest?
Absolutely. So today we have Dr. Margaret Falk, who is both a colleague and a friend. She has held several leadership roles, but currently presides at the Queen Mary Hospital in Hong Kong. She's a clinical assistant professor at the University of Hong Kong and has held numerous leadership positions within many orthopedic organizations. One which I have been involved with, she has been the program chair of the CCOT meeting and certainly has had a huge impact in that group. I'll just start off by saying, Margaret, welcome on behalf of Ortho Joe and spending a little bit of time with us today. And thanking you so much for everything you've been doing for the field of orthopedics overall.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me to come and join you guys.
Yeah. Well, let me start off, if I could. You know, in your bio, I was reading with quite a bit of interest, and it said that you are the 10th female orthopedic surgeon in Hong Kong. Now, that may be still current, or I suspect it's not that far off. And I guess the question I have, and I suspect Mark has, is what's it like being the 10th female orthopedic surgeon in Hong Kong?
Well, actually, I never really noticed that I'm the 10th until we actually counted the number. So, when I joined the department, it's just because that I like orthopedics, and I've been exposed to orthopedics quite very early on as a patient, because I actually fractured my fingers. And so I actually go under the operation, I have a cast on and all that. So after that, then in my internship, then I actually start, I thought I was always going to be in internal medicine, but then I changed my field. It's like, oh, actually I like orthopedics. I like the surgical side of things. And so I go into orthopedics, and I was lucky because even though that I'm the 10th, as a trainee too, or later on as an orthopedic surgeon, as in a female, I have two other colleagues who are female in my department. So that helps a lot. So I don't actually feel that I'm someone who's went out. And they actually help me to fit into the department. So we are very open in our interactions. And I think very early on, I know that we want to fit in. So we try to be, basically, it's an all boys club, and we actually want to join in as all boys club. That was a thing, which is slightly different from what we're now. Now it's like there's a difference. It's like, oh, we should have our own identity, and then we can be able to do something slightly different from the boys, and the other way around, and the boys should be able to do something different from us. So yeah, but at that time, I think I want to fit in, and that was the culture.
I think that's a great story, though, how important that mentorship is when you're in a minority position in any organization. And it really helps to have colleagues that have gone through it and can assist you along. That's a wonderful reminder of that fact.
When you've taken on some of these major leadership roles, Margaret, for example, let's say at CCOT as program chair, when you look at your own expertise, and then I know you've done so much training in upper extremity, particularly hand and wrist, and you've trained all over the world, and you're by every count an expert in the area. How does your expertise on top of your real promotion? I know you're also a member of the IOTA, which is the International Orthopedic Diversity Alliance. When you're the program chair and you can organize a meeting as, you know, as large as CCOT, how do you, like, what's your mindset in developing it? Are you looking specifically to ensure it's going to be a diverse meeting? Are you looking appropriately also to make sure there's going to be lots of voices heard? On top of the already expected high quality research that's going to be presented.
Yes, that is slightly difficult because obviously I come in as a very junior person in the whole executive board, so I'm one of the junior ones, and there's a lot of set ideas, a lot of set rules already, but then they're also looking forward for me to bring in new ideas, and that's the thing, and so. I'm lucky to have people that who actually the board to actually listen to me, and basically I said to them that one of the ideas is that we want more diverse panel, and that goes well with the exec board. But in the end, is more difficult to when you do the groundwork because as you know, one of the most international society, basically you have different committees for different. Regions in the body. So basically you've got hip and joint, you've got hip and knees, you've got shoulders, you've got sports, and they may already have a block number of faculties that I always have. And to change the whole thing is a bit difficult. And it is always that I can't really say that, oh, we should always invite female, but then I did tell all my committee chairs that please try to think about inviting a female or invite a diverse group. So we're not just talking about gender, we're also talking about the whole, we actually analyze and the ethnicity of the diverse the diversity of the people that of the countries that they represent. So I think that's important. It's not just about that we should invite all the ones that have been always come to the CCOT, but we want to bring in new ideas, and that's one way of doing it. So that is a bit difficult, but then I was just pushing them to do it, I think. Yeah.
Well, but both Mo and I were at the wonderful meeting that you organized in Kuala Lumpur, and it's very clear, as you just pointed out, that you're very intentional about trying to create that diversity and invite new and younger individuals to participate and not just have it be the, quote, good old boys club. It's apparent for those of us who are visiting. So congratulations. I have to just do a little bit of shameless promotion for any CCOT members that are listening, that they now can have access to JBJS clinical classroom through an agreement we just reached with CCOT. And sorry for promoting that.
No, that was great.
Listen, the more the better. I mean, one thing that struck me, Margaret, is that you identified yourself as being sort of the youngest member of an executive as potentially something that is not a good thing. I think it's an amazing thing. And I'm not saying you were saying that, but I think it's exceptional that, new ideas come from, new people and new people, from various backgrounds bring all kinds of new ideas. So, I mean, I imagine for you, being as, being involved in as many leadership activities as you are, you're probably in many ways also paving the path for so many other younger trainees who can actually see themselves finally, in these large committees. And I imagine that you must have opportunities to mentor many other junior trainees. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't know whether I can mentor them, but basically I always find that I'm a bit harsher on some of the female trainees than some of the male ones. And maybe it's because that it is that I know that it was how difficult it is in some way sometimes to get into the club. So I expect them to do a little bit more. But that's different. So that's another thing about mentorship, is not you don't always go for the like to like. Sometimes you go for the, for example, most of my mentors are male. And so, yeah, it's just the way it is. It doesn't have to be, that you are female and you should go for the female mentor. So yeah, but I've heard to not just me, I mean, I've heard from some of the juniors, it's like, oh, the female mentor seems to be actually more harsh and they expect more because they do, and we're talking about some of the senior ones, they are actually, they do have to fight a harder battle than the people who are now. And so they do expect that, you know, the younger ones, if they want to be themselves, that they should be doing the same thing and they should give up some of things because it is difficult. As a female, some of them do want to have family, they want to have time off, they want to build a family, and that is difficult. So some of my female colleagues actually don't have delayed to give birth to build a family when they are older so that they don't actually affect their training. So, but then there, I've got another way of people listening to me and then ask me, they said, now I feel that there are opportunities just for female. And they feel that they said that, it's another bias. So they are only giving it to me because I'm a female. They're not giving it to me because of what I do. So how should I do that? And I said, just grab the chance and just prove to everyone that you can do it. I think that's the only way. Nothing is completely fair in the world. It's just how you grab the opportunities and that's what I told them, is how you make the most of it. So yeah, prove to the others that this is the right choice. Maybe it was because they do choose them because of their gender, of their ethnicity. But but if you have the opportunities and you like it, and then you should go for it and then prove yourself that you're better. And that's the way that to pave up your career, I think, in general.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's really wise advice, Margaret, to just seize the opportunity and prove you're as good or better than the people that have gone before you who are maybe different than you. So very wise advice. Sorry.
And I was just simply going to say that, you know, the truth is that all of us have gotten to where we are through others opening doors. And, the worst thing I think sometimes you can do to yourself, and I've done it to myself many times, is doors are open. You don't realize those doors have been opened. And I think you walk through as many doors, some will shut, as I think you have also discussed. But I mean, the mere courage of walking through those doors and then demonstrating that the other side, you belong on that side of it, you know, and that I think is what you're helping, you know, a lot of individuals with. So I think that's a really, again, very sage advice. Margaret, I wonder, Margaret, if I could just switch to a clinical topic that I know you've done lots and lots of publications, and particularly you've done lots of training in hand and upper extremity. And now it also intuitively makes sense to me why you may have chosen upper extremity, given your injury and potentially that had something to do with it. Who knows? But, you know, an area that's always fascinated me is this issue of patient perceptions and outcomes. And there's a paper, I believe, or a study you've been involved in the past that talked about patient expectations predict outcomes in distal radius fractures. I wonder if you might speak a little bit to really that study, or in principle, what you like, if you believe that from your own data.
Yeah, the reason why, let me go back to some of the background. The reason why we do this is we want to see that there's a variable outcome, and there's a lot of different score out there. There's the BASH score, there's the PRE. There's a lot of different scores out there, and to say the outcome of the patients. But then we want to see, when they vary. So we look at the age, we look at everything. It's like, the IOD, we know that it will predict that it will be slightly bad. But then we said, is there anything that's particular that is independent? That, well, some of the things we can't change, but what can we change? And I think that was one thing that we looked in. And so to see that whether actually patients' expectation, because we want to do something that can be changed. And that was a very good study, because actually we find out that, the patient's expectation before the surgery will actually affect the outcome. And that is something that we can definitely change as a surgeon. And yeah, and we can basically set to, we can actually build up what the patients expected. So that's why we have a lot of patients' education before the surgery, and we have different help to help us to basically educate our patients. And that is, a good thing to basically, we want to improve the outcome, because that is one of things, I think that was one of the, well, basically we are seeing a lot of trauma and a lot of distal radius fractures in our daily lives, and how can we improve the outcome? Yeah.
It's funny you bring that up too, because many years ago, one of our colleagues involved in the study, and Mark and I were involved in a study called SPRINT on tibial shaft fractures, and then we did one on open fractures. And there was a colleague, Jason Bussa from McMaster, who had the exact same, I think, belief that you did in your work, which was, you know, something around either whether it's a personality or it's a belief system. And he called it the somatic preoccupation. So we're individuals who were catastrophizing, for example, feeling that no matter what happens, I'm going to have a bad outcome. Did they in fact have a bad outcome? And the funny thing is, over all the things that we identified, Margaret, that particular score on that scale was very highly correlated with an outcome. So in some ways, it wasn't too surprising to me, but it was also interesting to see that, you know, someone else had done the same work, you know, and validated the same ideas that we had. The question we're facing, and I suspect you are too, is, you know, what type of counseling do you give a patient beforehand if they are someone who has potentially a negative perception of their outcome?
Well, basically, we tell them that what they expect, what they should be expected. So, for example, if they need an usually they will be admitted to hospital and then they will wait for the emergency operation. And usually they'll be discharged the next day. So we're just going to tell them that first we are going to make them move. First, it's not going to be immobilization. That's why we do the operation. And we just need to tell them that it's going to be painful. Just take the painkillers. I think that's slightly different from a lot of people overseas. I mean, we in Hong Kong or in the Chinese population, we actually seldom have the opioid problems. We don't have a lot of painkillers, overuse of painkillers. They don't actually want any painkillers. So they are proud of not taking painkillers, in fact. So these are patients that they will come back and say, you know, oh, do you need more painkillers? After 2 weeks, they will say to us that, oh, no, I only take three so far from the operation till now. So they take pride of not taking painkillers. They feel that, you know, we're strong, we shouldn't. So we need to tell them that, you know, it's fine to take painkillers. It's fine to, you know, you need to mobilize it. So we need to tell them that, you know, they expected that it will be painful. They should take painkillers. It's not going to be bad for them for the long term. And then move them. And we do have a good rehabilitation team to help us as a hand therapist to help us to mobilize them and motivate them. And that is the thing that is important. Yeah.
So the therapists are really integral in trying to identify patients who do have that negative anticipation and try to work through that with them. Yeah.
Yes. One other thing is that we do, for the upper limbs rehab, we actually see our patients with the therapist. Yep. So and so most of the therapists actually know the patients quite well. Yeah. So they already identify, oh, this one is a bit apprehensive, this one's not. So, and because they are in the consultation room, they also know what we are telling the patients and they will reinforce it. Uh-huh. So that makes it a lot easier for them. So they will be able to follow the protocol. But yeah, there are some difficult ones. And so, and because of that, it's easier for us to pick them earlier. So for example, that CRPS is a very difficult thing because nowadays we're still talking about whether it is existence or not. But then there are patients who are very apprehensive, very stiff, very swollen. Then these are the patients that we will very early on tell them that, you know, we need to please motivate them and please try to ask them to come back. And then, yeah, and we need to have different strategies for them.
Great. Mo, do you have one last quick question for our guest?
Sure. Sure. So, Margaret, like, you know, if you look back and, you know, and maybe you're awfully reflective. I know you are, as we all are at some point. When you look back at your career and you look forward, what are some of the things or the thing that you are working towards now as you move forward in your career? Is there something specific or something special that you are thinking will be the next step for you?
It's always difficult because it's all these things that you always want to do and then how can you just pick one? And yeah, I do want to, in a way, you sort of say, I would want to make the world a better place. So I do want to help our patients and we do want to help our patients to have a better outcome. So it's always different ways of doing it. So in a way, I'm doing a lot of, So one of the things is research and one of the things is to motivate our younger generation to get into medicine and to be motivated. I think some of the times that I feel that, and so some of them said they, when they're very busy at work, they lost the sense of why they want to be a doctor in the first place. And then they just like, you know, this is a job and I will just get it done. But then you just have to remind them that they are the doctors. They should be looking after everyone. So yeah, so that's why I'm not only doing the upper limbs research, and I'm also involved in like ISACOT and CCOT, because I do find that it is important not just saying that, oh, okay, I need to be, yeah, I want to subspecialize in doing better things for a subspecialty. But at the same time, I do want to motivate more of the orthopedic surgeons in general and some of the minorities out there that they can do it.
Beautifully said. Thanks, Margaret. That's lovely.
Yeah, well, Dr. Fox, thank you so much for all you've done so far in your relatively short career, and for all the leadership you've provided in adding new and real value to CCOT with diversity and paying attention to the program. And we are going to watch with great interest as your career develops over the next 30 plus years and how you really do change the field by motivating others and encouraging them to remember why they became a physician in the first place. So we congratulate you. It's been great talking with you, and we're going to follow your career along with great interest. So thanks very much, and have a good evening in Hong Kong. And Mo and I will have a good morning in Canada and the U.S.
Absolutely.
So, yep.
Cheers.
Thanks again,
cheers.
Margaret.
Yep.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. Care.